Well, good afternoon, fellow constitutionalists, and welcome to the Free-for-All Friday edition of the Dan Clements Show, a Christian political talk show. I'm your host, Dan Clements, your constitutional warrior fighting for your right just to be an American. It is February 2nd, Groundhog Day, folks. Thorn Roden out there gave us six more weeks of winter, folks, in the year of our Lord 2018. Remember, we're a hyphen-free, PC-free zone. God is still in control. He does love you. And I'm broadcasting live today from the Hemlock Studios here in the beautiful central Susquehanna Valley in the great Keystone State. And we're supposed to get some weather this weekend. We had a little precipitation last night. Nothing here. They got a little bit more just north of us, which they can keep it north of us. So I am, for all intents and purposes, and I don't normally say this in the winter because I'm not one of these folks that continually need to. I got to fix something here real quick. Oh, my camera. There we go. I'm not one of these folks that continually needs to be in the warm. I don't mind winter that much. However, this winter, I kind of mind it a little bit. And that's more because of my fibromyalgia than anything else. But we are going to get through this today. Now, if you noticed, I had not gotten a show out yesterday. I do have one. It's going to be, I got to re-record it. So I'm going to be recording that after this show and putting that up along with this show. And I got a couple other small videos I want to do. So just hold on to your hats and hopefully we'll get that episode out so we can keep the episodic flow going, as it were, on the channel. Today we're going to talk a little bit about release the memo already. I am so sick and tired of the political drama that is around this, that is absolutely just going crazy and going nuts around this whole thing. And it's just, again, it amazes me how many people out there don't want this memo released. And it's just looking at who doesn't want the memo released tells me we got to get the dumb thing out there. You have the Democrats that don't want it released, you have the Department of Justice, and you have the FBI that doesn't want it released. And I'm the type of person, I'm like, the more sunshine on an issue, the better. Sunshine is very cleansing, and we need that. We need a transparent government, which, you know, we were promised the last administration, but we didn't get. And we were promised this administration. And so far, we have had a lot more transparency. I won't say it's up to the level that we need, but we've had a lot more transparency under President Donald Trump than we had under President Barack Obama. And I know some folks are going to get mad at me for saying that, and I have said that on several different feeds on Twitter and Facebook. And the folks coming back, again, there's too many people live in an echo chamber. There really are. And if you say anything bad about Barack Obama, I got a cousin out in Iowa. If I say anything bad, she's going to defriend me. And I'm like, and I scolded her for that. I said, really? If we have a difference of opinion, or if I'm stating facts that you don't like, you're going to defriend me. You don't try to debunk the facts that I have, or you don't try to make an argument saying what I'm thinking or how I'm looking at this, or I have confirmation bias, whatever. You don't say that. You just say, I'm not going to listen to any negative things about my president, Barack Obama. And I've had a lot of people besides my cousin say that. And so there's a definite confirmation bias on the left. And I'm not saying that I'm not guilty of that myself, but I'm aware of it. I'm aware of the downfalls of having a confirmation bias. That's why when I research these stories that I bring you, I try to look at different sources to see what they're saying and see who brings up the facts in it correctly. And how do I judge that? Well, you got to do research. I got a story today talking about the southern border wall, and it's not the one here in the United States. And I went to make sure that the article from a far right news source, Breitbart, is accurate. Because I've had way too many people out there, this past week especially, way too many people out there. Well, and matter of fact, one of them is a journalist out on the West Coast. He says he works for a newspaper, a small local newspaper out there. And every source that I cited talking about a certain story, he says, well, you can't use this source, like the Washington Examiner, You can't, because of certain reasons. You know, who owns it, what their political leanings are. No matter if they get the story factual or not. He didn't even cover that. Matter of fact, I asked him, the article I shared with him, I asked him if he even read it, and he says, no, because of the source. The source you have, or the person you're sourcing who published the story, I can't trust them, so I don't even use it. I said, really? I even said, and you work for a newspaper? And you don't even try to source to see if a story is true or not? And that's what we're dealing with, folks. This is what we're dealing with out here in America today. When someone was citing CNN News about an article earlier this week, which was totally false, that it was debunked so hard and so fast on this particular item that I was accused of using Fox News as my source, which I didn't. I told them the source I was using, and I said, why do you automatically assume that I'm a Republican? Why do you automatically assume things that aren't in evidence? And the one guy said, well, you sound conservative. And I said, I am, but that doesn't make me a Republican. Not every Republican is a conservative, and not every conservative is a Republican. You know, that's a that's what they call the fallacy of composition. Too many people assume, I don't assume that all leftists are Democrats, because there are leftists that are in the Green Party, and there's other, the Communist Party USA, so there's other political parties out there. I don't automatically assume that they're Democrats. I do sometimes place them in the Democrat Party, especially if I know they're members of it, but like Jill Stein was of the Green Party. Now people say, well, she was actually a Democrat that was part of the Green Party. She put her hat in a ring for the presidential, you know, nomination against Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton in 2016 under the guise of the Green Party. So again, you got to watch out for your confirmation bias. You have to watch out for committing logical fallacies. Again, I'm a constitutional conservative. That does not make me a Republican. Nor are all Republicans constitutional conservatives. We know better. I mean, the proof's in the pudding, as it were. So I work real hard trying, knowing that I have a bias. I'm biased conservatively, but also knowing that, you know, I need to dig into stories and I need to look at what left-leaning websites are saying, or news sites are actually saying. And for the most part, and I'll pick on the Huffington Post here, but the other ones are guilty of this. Now, Mother Jones is very, very left-leaning, but at least they link to the articles that we're talking about, or link to stories or studies or whatever. Huffington Post, the 9 times out of 10, they're just going to link to another story they wrote about something they're talking about in this story, and you go to that story and there's no external links. It's all linked to Huffington Post articles. And now that's a trick I call them illegitimate, but that's a trick of having somebody click back into your source. It gives your source more click-throughs, and they can show that to advertisers, saying, hey, look at the click-throughs. But they don't, and I wonder if some advertisers actually know this, that, you know, one of the questions you should be asking is, how many external click-throughs do you get? You know, do you source material outside of yourself? Do you go, because that reaches a broader audience. And I don't know if some advertisers are aware of that or not. I would hope they would be. I would hope they would be. And so whenever I research something, I like to see external links, especially, you know, and it's not because I don't trust the sources. It's because when I get this accusation thrown at me that I have confirmation bias, that I'm a conservative, and all I ever use is right-wing, alt-right news sources, per se, what they actually say, and I just want to nip that in the bud right away. But on the other hand, don't come back at me in social media and not have read the article, not have researched it yourself to see if it's factually correct or not, and then just dismiss things out of hand because of where they're sourced from. That is just the height of stupidity. It's the height of ignorance. And that's why there's so many people that are living inside of echo chambers. It's maddening sometimes, especially when you step into an echo chamber and you didn't realize you just stepped into an echo chamber. Then it gets really maddening. And the best thing you can do is speak your peace, because you're not going to change your minds. If you find yourself in an echo chamber, you're not going to change your minds by arguing with them on social media. Now, I'll go the distance as far as I think I should go, and then I'll just extricate myself out of that echo chamber and let them just fume over what I said. Because with the rare exception, do I have somebody ever come back out of an echo chamber with actual facts, not feelings? And this has been the one thing, and this is why, you know, I called about the, or titled today, my show today, Release the Memo Already. This has been so true with this Russian collusion story. I have so many of my Facebook antagonists, so many leftists that I follow on Facebook that are friends, families, acquaintances, that just aren't giving up on this narrative. And I'm like, folks, where's the proof? If there were proof, and I say this with 100% confidence, if there was any Russian collusion, do you think the Democrats wouldn't have leaked it already? You bet your bottom dollar it would have been leaked already. There's no doubt in my mind that it would have been leaked already. And the same thing with this memo. Do you think this memo, the security memo from Devin Nunes and the Republicans in that committee, do you think if it painted the Republicans or President Trump or anything in a bad light, don't you think it would have been leaked already? And again, I don't want to fall into any logical fallacies here, but it seems to me, I'm pretty confident, that because of all the howling and the huffing and puffing by the Democrats in Congress, in the Senate, in the House, folks at the DOJ and the FBI, there's something to this memo. We don't know what yet, and I've been trying to track this over here, just making sure my stream's going good here. Looking on Google News and just keeping up the top headlines here. President Trump approves release of the memo criticizing FBI surveillance. This has been posted by the Washington Post 15 minutes ago. So hopefully we'll get some details. And I'll try to get a hold of this myself, read it, maybe put a video up later this afternoon about this, because this is very important. I'm just looking on here, secret memo hints at new Republican target, Rod Rosenstein. Well, that was back on the 29th, so 8 minutes ago. NPR is reporting Trump formally authorizes Congress to release a controversial Nunes memo. So it's President Trump approved it. It's going to get released. We'll see what's happening here as far as... I just want to open up this link here real quick for this. Well, let's get into the rest of the show here, folks. Today's show is being brought to you by the Dan Clement Show Cafe Press store. Go to thedanclementshow.com, and on the menu, you'll see the TDCS Cafe Press button. Hit that, and it'll take you over to the site. And when you do that, when you click on everything in there, we got hats, shirts, hoodies, coffee mugs, mouse pad. If there's anything else in there you would like to see in there, let me know. And I'll try to get it in there. And when you buy something there, I get a percentage of the sale, and you get some quality goods here. I have bought a coffee mug, the white coffee mug that's in there. Really good. Really good coffee mug. And it's it just amazed me how the quality of that coffee mug. Now, the one I have was from my old show, Back to Basic. The new one here is the Dan Clement Show, and hopefully here in another couple weeks here, I'm going to get one just for the show here so I can show it to you on the web here. But anyway, if you like what I'm doing here and you want to see me expand, you want to see me grow, please help me by going to the danclementshow.com WordPress button there on the menu. And again, you're going to get some quality stuff from these folks. All right, today's daily Bible reading comes from the book of Romans, chapter 15, verses 1 through 3. We then who are strong ought to bear with the scruples of the weak, and not to please ourselves. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, leading to edification. For even Christ did not please himself, but as it was written, the reproaches of those who reproached me or reproached you fell on me. And I just want to deal real quick with this first part. When we then who are strong ought to bear the scruples of the weak and not to please ourselves. Romans chapter 3, or chapter 6, verses 3 and following, talks about how our baptism is a burial and how when we come up out of the grave, we're a new creature or we're a new man. That's not a one and done, being a new man. This is something that is a continual work for a Christian. As we find out truths of God's word on how he wants us to live, because Peter tells us God has given us everything that we need that pertains to life and godliness. As we learn these new truths and apply them to our lives, we continually strip more and more of the old man and keep him in the grave and continually put on this new man, you know, or become this new man. It's not a one and done thing. We're a new creature coming up out of the water, but we're not perfected yet. And we'll never be perfected in this life in and of ourselves. The only perfection we can get is through Jesus Christ. And so we need to bear with those who are less mature than we are, because they're still struggling about stripping off that, you know, continually stripping the layers off of that old man. And I'm convinced that we've gotten that wrong about, you know, we come up out of the watery graves of baptism, and we're a new creature, and so we don't have to do anything else. We're constantly having to renew our mind, as Paul tells us in Romans chapter 12, you know, the renewing our mind by going to God's word. Today's quote meal comes from Henry Nouwen, or Nouwen. Gratitude is the most fruitful way of deepening your consciousness that you are not an accident, but a divine choice. Words to live by there, folks. Short Bible lesson today. It comes from Kevin Colley over at gewatkins.net. Now he wrote this clear back in 2004, but I read through this outline. It's a sermon outline, and it's entitled, For Obedience of the Faith. Why was the gospel given to us? Why do we live the gospel? Why do we read the gospel and try to apply it to our lives? And Kevin tells us it's for the obedience of faith. Really good outline, folks. I encourage you to go over and read that and see what's going on there. Now, let me do something here real quick. I'll just bring us over to my other computer. Let me get this set up for you real quick. I was hoping they were going to do this before the show, but obviously they didn't. And so I'm going to lead off with this on the show here. GOP memo criticizing FBI surveillance is released. Chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes, Republican California, arrives for the state. Oh, I hate that when they do that. That's a picture of him arriving to the State of the Union. A GOP memo alleging surveillance abuse by the FBI has been released, intensifying a fight between the White House and Republican lawmakers on one side and the nation's top law enforcement agency over whether the origins of a probe into Russian interference in 2016 were tainted by political bias. President Trump has approved release of the memo without redactions Friday morning. Woo-hoo! I've been pushing for this, folks. I've been telling people on social media, we don't need any redactions. We need to know who is behind this, you know, and if they were doing wrong, we need to take them to task for it. We really do. President Trump told reporters in the Oval Office, I think it's a disgrace what's happening in our country. A lot of people should be ashamed of themselves, and much worse than that. The FBI and the Justice Department has lobbied strenuously against the memo's release. In a statement Wednesday, the FBI has said that it was gravely concerned that key facts were missing from the memo, which it said left an inaccurate impression of how the agency conducted surveillance under the authority of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. So Friday morning, the president tweeted it's in anticipation of the memo's release, saying the top leadership and investigators at FBI and Justice Department have politicized the sacred investigation process in favor of Democrats against Republicans, something which would have been unthinkable just a short time ago, he added. Rank and file are great people. And so Republican Adam Schiff, the top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, tweeted in response, "No, Mr. President, it's worse than that. The country's top elected leader has agreed to selectively and misleadingly release classified info to attack the FBI. That's what would have been unthinkable a short time ago." And I keep asking this when I was in these social media, when I'm on these threads talking to folks, what do the Democrats have to hide? What does the DOJ and the FBI have to hide? And folks, we as the sovereign people of the United States of America, we not only demand, but we deserve transparency from our government. And if it embarrasses some top people in the different departments of the federal government, good. I say good. Because maybe they shouldn't have been doing it to begin with if they're embarrassed. If you're embarrassed of what you did, or if you think it needs to be hid because you're going to take a hit for it, then I say all the better to get it out in the open. Let the light of day show on this. And so I'm going to keep an eye on this throughout the day. Like I said, I'm hoping that we get the actual memo somewhere, but I didn't see anywhere in that report. Let me go down through here. I'm just looking here. I don't see anything down in here where they were saying anything about the memo as far as the memo being released itself. So this is something that, again, has been a topic for fodder for quite a while. It really has. I mean, I have this article here I want to read to you here about the road to the memo's release began with Democratic media and FBI outrages. And this is a New York Post story by the editorial board. And it was posted on, for some reason, I did not get the date on that. I do apologize for that. I normally put dates on these things. It was posted yesterday. I'm sorry about that, folks. Just let me put this in here. 2/1/2018. All right. So, all the noise from Democrats, much of the media, and even the FBI over the coming declassification of the House Intelligence Committee memo needs some context. The release is the latest act in a drama that began with grossly partisan and irresponsible conduct by key Democrats, much of the media, and some of the Bureau. The memo touches on the collusion probe, the subject of months of headlines touting supported Trump operatives' ties to Russia during the 2016 campaign. Now, this is an editorial, and some of these may sound like they're fact. These are conjectures. You know, just some summations or you know, something that they think might be happening. So just take this with a grain of salt when we're reading through this. The ties that President Trump has always denied, with no proof yet surfacing to contradict it. And again, if there was some smoking gun, some really hot evidence that President Trump and his campaign colluded with Russia, we would know this by now. We know that the deep state and the DOJ and the FBI would have leaked this already. We know that. I don't have any doubts in my mind whatsoever that we know that. So a lot of these things are conjectures here. And this is, like I said, to me, and like I said, this is just personal opinion here. These folks that are crying foul in the Democrat Party, especially Adam Schiff, and he's the ranking Democrat on the Intel Committee. Now, he claimed months ago that he'd seen more than circumstantial proof of collusion, and the New York Times and Washington Post time and again cited anonymous Intel officials, clearly FBI or ex-FBI, to report supposed Trump-Russia contacts. Now, again, what is more than circumstantial to a Democrat may not be circumstantial or more than circumstantial in the court of law. And what he's meaning by that, more than circumstantial, some people can convict it on circumstantial evidence that they don't have any hard proof, but there's just a vast amount of circumstantial evidence that points to someone's guilt. But what might be in this, what he might say was circumstantial evidence, could be just wishful thinking. Because there have been a lot of Democrats out there that have been engaging in wishful thinking. Now, one of the things that we have to remember here is there's still ongoing... that got a little loud there, didn't it? There's still some ongoing investigations into the Clinton Foundation by the FBI. And there's still a lot of other investigations that are going on. Some of the things that Democrats have a very short memory of, especially when their guy or girl does things wrong unconstitutionally or unlawfully, is the gun running by the Obama administration and Eric Holder of the Attorney General, and the deaths of a couple border agents because of weapons that were let loose in this gun running operation. That was under Obama, and he did a couple other things, but to me that was one of the biggest no-nos in his administration. Of course, the Obama supporters, like my cousin, they don't want to hear that. Oh, that's just far right-wing conspiracy theory. No, there was a couple border agents that were killed with a weapon because they had the serial numbers that were released to try to track cartel activity in Mexico with these weapons. And this was all done, you know, on the QT. You know, kind of hush-hush, as it were. And the other, a couple other things that we have to keep in mind, too, is that under President Obama, now all this happened under President Obama, but we have Benghazi. That still hasn't been, in my opinion, still has not been fully investigated. We still don't know where Hillary Clinton was for a certain period of time while this was going on. American people are, I'm still asking the question why we had a ready response team ready to go in there that could have pulled these folks out. Why weren't they sent in? That question has never been answered. And Hillary Clinton being part of the State Department, and I include Barack Obama here because as far as I'm concerned, the way Barack Obama ran his administration, especially the executive branch, was totally authoritarian. When it came to the executive branch, I refuse to believe that he did not know what was going on with Eric Holder's gun running or Hillary Clinton's Benghazi, what was happening in Benghazi, the email scandal with her private servers there. He knew, he had to know because he was sending emails to it. The Clinton Foundation and a pay-to-play with Uranium One. There is more evidence. And there, it's mounting, if not every day, at least weekly or monthly, against Hillary Clinton and Obama on their dirty dealings and their unlawful dealings, you know, with everything they were doing, than there is on this Russian probe into President Trump. Again, if I'm serious, folks, if there was something to it, they would have definitely released that by now. And I want to get over this other article here since we're talking about releasing the memo here. It says, release the memo. Let's stop pretending that Democrats are the defenders of the FBI. Now, this is, I like this. This is by James Gagliano, and he's an opinion contributor over at The Hill. And he posted this today. And I don't know why I didn't get The Hill in there. But anyway, I'll put this, I got to fix these things as I do it. If I don't, I'll forget. So he's in at The Hill. He says, the collective amnesia that we are currently standing witness to is astonishing, even by Washington uber hypocritical standards. Democrats are suddenly the political party that stands with the FBI. Yep, you heard that right. They now also believe passionately in Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court sanctioned spying on U.S. citizens, and they are steadfastly cautioning patience when it comes to releasing a potentially damaging memo that Republicans who have seen it purport contains relevance of embarrassing and dangerous governmental misconduct that may have influence in an election. And while Republicans certainly don't have clean hands in the in the refuse pile currently, masquerading as bipartisan cooperation on Capitol Hill. Democrats have taken pious sanctimony and hypocrisy to heights heretofore unreached. I love his wording here. Heretofore unreached. So we have the Democrats, and I was watching Stephen Molyneux this morning. He was talking about this, and he was adding these things up like I'm talking about here to their deflections from the truth. The Democrats are all of a sudden just deflecting. You know, they're saying, well, this was top secret. If you let this out, it's going to damage everything. We're defending the FBI's right to do these things, or, you know, the carry on these investigations. It'll damage them, so we need to protect them. And when did the Democrats become enamorate, at least letting the public know that they're all for spying on American citizens? I thought they were the party of the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. I thought they were the party of that. And now they're coming out in defense of all the stuff they used to stand against. Folks, I love James' terms there. Bipartisan cooperation on Capitol Hill. Democrats have taken pious sanctimony and hypocrisy to heights heretofore unreached. And he's absolutely correct. And again, Republicans' hands are not clean enough. They just voted a couple weeks ago to reauthorize the FISA Act, part of the Patriot Act. And they should have stripped out, I believe it's Section 702. You know, they had to do something with that so Americans who might be talking to somebody overseas unknowingly get spied upon. Because they might get a warrant for this guy overseas, but do they have a warrant or a right to actually hear the conversation on the other end without a warrant? And that's what the FISA court's for, to actually go get this warrant saying, you know what, we heard on this end of the conversation some hinky stuff, so we'd like to go in and listen to the other end of the conversation and find out who's actually talking in that. So, again, you know, that's why they have the FISA court set up, and I'm not against having that FISA court set up as long as it's constitutional and as long as it's legal and as long as no hanky-panky's going on when someone comes to ask for a warrant. When you ask for a warrant, folks, this is very, very important. Let me get my pocket constitution out here. When you ask for a warrant, and let's go over to the Fourth Amendment. Searches and seizures. This was ratified on December 15th, 1791. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable search and seizure shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation and particularly describing the place to be searched, the persons or things to be seized. So that in order to get a warrant, whoever's asking for the warrant has to be supported by oath or affirmation, which means they have to take an oath saying what they want the warrant for is truthful and accurate and factual. They can't just go on fishing expeditions with warrants. That's illegal. And a lot of people, and I've been questioning this myself, a lot of people have been asking the same thing about the FISA courts. Is this a fishing expedition or is it not? When it comes to the FISA court spying on an American campaign. I just read, real quick, folks, I just read a Twitter this morning. Someone thought, it wasn't a Twitter, it was over on Minds.com. Someone thought that the Russians were having Twitter bots push the release the memo. Now, again, if this comes out, if this memo comes out and does great harm and damage to the Russian collusion investigation by Agent Mueller, or Special Prosecutor Mueller, this exonerates Russia from at least this part of the investigation into the collusion with President Trump. So, and I'm not saying it's right that they have bots going in. I'm kind of curious because yesterday was the first day that YouTube was trying to scrub off all these automatic accounts that bots are actually setting up and stealing money with, you know, by views. I don't want to get off on a side note here. But people are blaming Russia, you know, for, or at least somebody put a memo out saying They thought it was Russian bots that were pushing this release the memo narrative. So it seems to me that we have Russian collusion on all corners over here. I'm just checking the news again to see if the actual memo got released. It says it is released here. Like I said, we will get into this. I have another short video this afternoon. We'll actually talk about this. Let's see here. It says a GOP memo. Oh, read the memo. There it is. I'm not sure if it's there. It goes. It has a thing. Oh, here it is. It has a thing about reading the memo. It's six pages long. So we're not going to get into that right now. I know other people are already digging into this. We're not going to get into this right now. But just so you know that I'm not messing with anybody out there about releasing a memo, I'll show you this real quick here. I love this. I really do. I love open and broadcast. I'm starting to learn more and more about it, and getting and actually setting some things up more. You know what? Here, let me go to video capture here, so you get my ugly mug out of the way there. This is a 6-page memo. Like I said, I will be reading it and going down through it. There's the unclassified memo itself, and it goes through. So again, after the show, I got to re-record yesterday's show, but I'll be studying this, and I'll definitely get another video out today about this today. So fear not, folks. We will have the whole story as soon as it develops, as it were. So, and this is something real quick here that goes along with the whole thing, with this whole memo thing, which I think is very important to get out. Now, this is by Sarah Carter over at sarahcarter.com. New Storch page text discuss evasion of message archiving. They released this. I know some of the stuff has been by FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act. I'm just showing you down here, where they're actually, Storch and Page are actually discussing this. You know, can we do this? Can we get around saving these texts and that, because they felt that department heads were doing it, or other folks in other departments were actually doing this. Now, we're not sure who they're actually talking about, and this link will be on the show notes page at the DanClemensShow.com right after the show. We're not sure who they're talking about, but let me get that over there. Sorry about that. I thought I had that switched over. Down here, they're actually talking about, here's a portion of the text messages. You know, I'm happy to pilot that. We get around our security monitoring issues? No, he's proposing that we just stop following them. And this is Page, an attorney for the FBI. You know, and it goes on. This is pretty damning here, because these two are colluding together to possibly get around the security measures the requirement of the capture to text from the Office of Management and Budget. But we're not the only ones right here. We're not the only ORG, I'm told, who is following that rule. His point is, if no one else is doing it, then why should we? Nobody else is doing it, why should we? You know what your mom would tell you? If your friends are jumping over a cliff, you're going to follow them? Pretty sage advice for moms. You know what I mean? You know, well, everybody else is doing it. How many people use that excuse? I think I tried that once or twice, and after I got burnt a couple times, I quit using it. Well, so-and-so is doing it, why can't I do it? Or, you know, well, if they're doing it and you like to do it, go live with their folks. No. Mom's pretty smart. You know, all moms are pretty smart. You know, they've lived long enough, they got some really good comebacks to when we talk about dumb and stupid. They really do. So again, we're going to dig into this memo after the show, and I'll bring it up to you in a separate video. I don't know if we're going to read the whole thing. I might just read the whole thing and let everybody decide what they want to do with the information that's in there. Now I want to switch topics here and talk about a southern border wall. But it's probably not the southern border wall you're thinking of. And again, I love this. You know, all these open border folks and groups that George Soros supports, libertarians that are open borders that don't believe in the state and don't believe we should have borders, which I think that's going too far, not having borders and not being able to secure things in our state. I have this story here, and again, it's from Breitbart News, okay? Oh, well, Dan, why are you using such a far right-leaning news source out there? They're alt-right. You can't do that. And it's like, you know, if I listen to the naysayers out there, if I listen to folks who say that, I wouldn't report anything. I wouldn't be able to comment on any news. Because some folks are going to say it's too far left. Some folks are going to say it's too far right. And what I tell those folks is go get a life. You're not the one doing the research here. A lot of times folks are just dismissing these things out of hand because they don't really know about the news source. Oh, well, you watch faux news. They mean Fox News. That you can't trust them. And it's like, well, I asked this one lady on Facebook that I was talking to. I said, well, who do you use? And she says, CNN. And I laughed. I said, you got to be kidding me. The fake news network? Blah, blah, blah. She went on a long diatribe and stuff like that. And the article she actually shared with me, I pointed out like three fallacies, three things that were not factual in the story she shared with me from CNN that was written by CNN personnel. So I'm like, okay, you know, I'll look at articles on CNN and I'll check their sources, but if they're too unfactual, I have too many mistakes in them, I might use them to point them out. You know, hey, this story is, you can't use CNN to be, you know, honest about all this. But for the most part, I don't even waste my time because it is a waste of time for me. Now, this, you probably already read the headline there. Hungary, the country of Hungary over in Europe, builds a wall, cuts illegal immigration by over 99%. And this is reported by Jack Montgomery on the 16th of September in last year, right? And this was almost at the, maybe not at the height of the immigration or the migration or refugee migration problem they had over there, but they built a wall over in Hungary. Now, Hungary has slashed illegal immigration by over 99% after rolling out a series of powerful border fences in response to the European migrant crisis, possibly providing a lesson as to the potential impact of constructing President Trump's much-discussed southern wall in the U.S. Speaking on the second anniversary of the government's move to seal Hungary's borders with Serbia, which is also an external border for the European Union, Prime Minister Viktor Orban's chief security advisor, Gregory Bakandi, announced that the fences have caused illegal immigration to collapse from 391,000 in 2015 to 18,236 in 2016 to just 1,184 in 2017. And when I shared this on Facebook, I jokingly said, and I did get some funny responses back, I jokingly said, well, see, the border walls don't work. There's still 1% getting through and over in Hungary. That's proof they don't work. And I was saying that tongue-in-cheek. And I did rise the ire of some of the open border folks that I share things with on Facebook. But again, it was hilarious. And this comes from a publication. There's a right here where it says they announced in the article, if you go over to danclemensshow.com and click on that link to this story, Hungary builds a wall, cuts illegal immigration by over 99%, you'll see where it says announced, and that takes you over to a governmental website for Hungary that put this announcement out and gave these figures. So if you have something against Breitbart, okay, you have something against Breitbart. But don't dismiss a story out of hand before you start running references and check and see if what they're saying is true, which they are. They're being very truthful here, and they're so truthful they actually put a link to the government site that put the press release out. And so border walls do work. Border walls absolutely do work. And the thing is, and this is the funny part about this whole story, the thing is that it just amazes me how open border folks, or progressives or regressives, as we call them on the show here, keep talking about how border walls don't work. And I saw a commercial yesterday on YouTube, somebody shared, where a Mexican politician, I don't know where he was from, climbed a short metal border wall at some beach. I don't know if it was in San Diego or what. See, border walls won't work. See, I can get up on this one and go right over. They don't work. Well, you know what? The ones I've seen, and I hadn't shared the story with you here because I was still trying to find some confirmation on it, but the prototypes that I've seen that President Trump asked to be built were actually tested, or at least someone reported on YouTube that they're actually being tested by special forces military here in the United States to see how easy it is to get over the wall without specialized equipment. And that's all they said, and they didn't have any links or anything, which makes me mad. They don't put links in. So I've still been trying to research that, see if I can find some video of these guys and gals in the special forces. I think mostly guys. I don't think there's too many gals in the special forces. But anyway, I digress. Scaling these walls. And they're going to pick the one that's going to last the longest, that's least likely to allow egress into the United States. And even, folks, even if we come anywhere close to that 99%, I mean, even if we get within 10% of that 99%, we will have taken a huge step towards the illegal immigration problem in the United States. And the other thing, I keep talking about this, and people keep chiding me about this, but it's a fact. This is an actual fact that if Mexico has to deal with all the people that can't get through to America, if they have to start dealing with them, guess what? The Mexican government's in trouble. Because they've been using the United States as a relief valve for years to carry on their socialistic policies in Mexico. And so what's going to happen if these people are staying in Mexico, they're not remitting money from the United States to their families in Mexico, so they're going to lose a lot, we're told billions of dollars a year going into the Mexican economy that they don't have to worry about giving the services back to the people, you know, as far as, you know, welfare or anything in Mexico, because they're not in Mexico. They're in the United States. They're in the United States. And yesterday, I thought it was funny, as all get out, somebody shared, they were migrant workers picking celery in California, cutting it, detopping it, the whole nine things, and boxing it up on this tractor mechanism and that. And all the celery is being hand cut. And some the bottom, and this was from a very someone I just friended, and he seems to put out more left-leaning than he does right-leaning, but even the right-leaning ones he puts out, the questions he asked about it are very leading towards the left. But he said, you know, is this a job you want to do? And, you know, he's talked to Americans. So I hurriedly went over and clicked on a picture of a celery harvester. And I uploaded that onto the YouTube channel. I'm a bad boy. It said, yeah, I'll do it. Because we had this discussion years ago before I got into YouTube or anything. There was a tomato farmer up around Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, pretty big tomato farmer up there, that was hiring illegals and paying them peanuts compared to, you know, other wages in the area, getting his tomatoes harvested. And because of something happened here, and I can't remember the exact story about it, when it was happening, I think it was around, I think they were trying to do e-verify, and Pennsylvania was cracking down on illegal immigrants here in the state about rent and housing and all that kind of stuff. Some of the illegal aliens or some of the migrants that he was using to pick his crops weren't coming back the next year. He was afraid he wasn't going to have enough people to pick his tomatoes. And he's one of the few farmers in the area that still uses manual labor to harvest his tomatoes. Furman's is a cannery just over out back in Northumberland, PA. They rent or lease property off of farmers all over the area here where they grow all sorts of vegetables, and their biggest cash crop is tomatoes. They actually lease land clear down in the Delmar Peninsula down in Maryland and Delaware and bring tomatoes up to their cannery for tomato paste, sauces, purees, stewed tomatoes, chopped tomatoes, you name it. And they don't use any migrant workers to pick their tomatoes. It's all mechanical. It's all mechanical. But this guy up there, and there was reports, you know, on this guy, like I said, he was an old curmudgeon, I guess. And he was told, you know, why don't you get a tomato harvester to pick your crop? And I don't know how many different excuses he made. And yeah, a piece of equipment is expensive, and you got, you know, to buy it, to maintain it and everything. But how much in labor would he be saving? And again, I was looking through all the different crops that they use manual labor for, and there's a machine that'll pick these crops. I mean, from strawberries to corn to, you know, you name it. I was surprised. I thought all cabbages and stuff like that were picked by hand, and here they have a harvester for that. So again, you know, I talk a lot about illegal immigration, and they talk about they're taking jobs that Americans, you know, don't want or don't want to do. It's like, no, it's not that Americans don't want to do it. We have, and it's not only farmers. You got it in a lot of it in the construction industry. There's a lot of under the table money being paid for workers, especially in the construction industry, and it is taken away from jobs that Americans would do. But there's a lot of American companies out there that want to cut their labor costs by using illegal immigrants. And again, this goes with my story. If you watched the videos this past week. Last week we were talking about the Bernie Sanders Medicaid for All or Medicare for All town hall, and he had a panel of businessmen on there. And the only reason why these businessmen want Medicare for All is then they can dump all of their insurance and medical expenses off on the American taxpayers, so they don't have to pay for it. And again, it's not right that they do this. It really isn't. It's not right that they do this, but they do. And this has to stop. This corporatism, this crony capitalism in America has got to stop. You know, honestly, especially out in California, it's got to be cheaper to run a piece of machinery that does the cutting. Now, I don't know if they have a machine that actually will bag it and put it in a box and everything. They probably do. But even so, if you take that one physical step out of cutting and topping off celery by hand, load it on a trailer and take it to a processing place, you know, on the farm or elsewhere, and bring it in, you could wash it off and bag it, and everything can be done there. And like I said, I imagine they got machines that'll actually do that. Now, you probably need some human eyes on it to inspect the stuff. But again, we're a little bit far afield here, but, you know, one of the reasons why some folks don't want a border wall is because of crony capitalism. They want to get the cheap labor so they can maximize their profits, and there's nothing wrong with maximizing your profits, but you shouldn't do it on the backs of human beings. You really shouldn't. If there's another alternative to backbreaking work in the fields, that's what these companies should be using to get that job done. But again, we put a border wall up, it's going to drastically reduce illegal immigration in the country. Now, I'm not saying we still won't have migrant workers coming up here, but I think the move is going to go more and more towards mechanizing more and more things when it comes to produce, that migrants come up and do the work that most people won't do now anymore. So I just wanted to point that out, that there's other southern border walls in the world that are actually working and actually doing the job of deterring illegal immigrants into countries and stuff like that. So, it's, you know, I think it's a good thing. I think we need to build a border wall. We need to do that first. I think President Trump is on the right track with his amnesty. I think it's a little high on the numbers, but, you know, they're talking about a 12-year period before, you know, that they have to go through before they can become citizens. But that has to be done after the wall and after the southern border secured and after we fix other problems, internal security as far as immigration, the people flying to the country on a visa and overstay that needs to be fixed. We should be able to track them people, and when their visa's up, they go. They go back to their country of origin. You know, I don't want to be unkind or anything, but that's how countries work. That's how immigration is supposed to work. And no, we're not a country of immigrants. Yes, I have ancestors that were immigrants, but guess what? After they immigrated here, they're the first generation that was born here. Guess what they are? They're native-born Americans. I'm third generation. I have my children are fourth generation. My sister has grandchildren or fifth generation born here in the United States. We're not immigrants anymore. The vast majority of Americans are not immigrants. Yes, we do have an immigrant background. That doesn't make us immigrants. I'm not an immigrant. I'm an American citizen and proud to be so. So there. Now, a couple more things. Let America vote. What a crooked organization that place is. I've been hammering them with videos. I've been hammering them on Twitter, Facebook, anywhere I can hammer. This Jason Kander, he ran for, I think he was a politician, got into office, and now he's not. He's the, I don't know if chairman or president of Let America Vote, a very left-leaning, George Soros-supported group that lies. I don't know a kinder way to put it. They lie to the American people about voter suppression. And the biggest one they lie about is the voter ID laws. In Wisconsin. And I put this out on the show on this Wednesday about Let America Vote is Deceiving America, where they're using a faulty study that was done in the two most heavily Democratic counties in the state of Wisconsin, and they extrapolated out of that how many people were disenfranchised because of voter ID, and again, they're participating in the fallacy of composition. And basically, if you don't know what the fallacy of composition is, you're at a baseball game. Logic would dictate, if you're sitting down and can't see the ball game very well, that if you stand up, you can see it better. So if you extrapolate that out and say, well, if one person stands up and they can see the game better, then logic dictates that if everybody stood up, everybody would be able to see the baseball game better. You see what I'm saying? That's a logical fallacy because then you get right back in that situation to where you were sitting and maybe couldn't see over somebody's head or around their shoulder or something like that. It's not going to be any better if everybody stands up. So if you're using a study that says a certain amount of people in these two areas of a state said that they were disenfranchised and without even checking to see if they were or not, then you extrapolate that out to the population of the state, that's a logical fallacy of composition. You cannot do that. It just doesn't make sense. But they cite these, Jason Kander and Let America Vote, they cite these studies about this. They cite them that these are actually factual. Now, I want to get down. I was going to do this on the page. I want to get into the last couple areas on this article. And this is a New Hampshire push for more voting restrictions. And it's news from Holly Raymer from the Associated Press and Hat Tips to SeaCoastline.com is the news site I found it on. Well, actually, I didn't find it. I went to Let America Vote's Twitter. They put this up, and then I clicked on that. One of the biggest things that Let America Vote is pushing in New Hampshire is that college students up there that are out of state cannot vote in New Hampshire. And I'm like, duh. They're not residents of the state. But their argument is that they're domiciled there going to college. Since they're domiciled there, they should be allowed to vote. But they're not a legal residence of New Hampshire. They haven't switched their residency over anything. You see where I'm going here? They're talking about domicile versus residence. A bill sponsored by Representative Sherman Packard, a Republican Loudoun Dairy, would essentially do away with the distinction between full-fledged residents and those who claim the state as their domicile for voting. This bill is similar to one that was amended by the Senate last month and sent back to the House. Deputy Secretary of State David Scanlon spoke in favor of the bill. He emphasized that neighboring states require those who vote in their states become residents subject to motor vehicle and other laws. Just being domiciled here and not being a resident is an absurd result, he said. And this, full-time RVers, this is something that they have to deal with. A lot of full-time RVers that sold their house and are living in a camper or a Class A motorhome or something, schoolie, whatever, a lot of times they will do what they call domicile themselves in another state. Florida, Texas, North Dakota are the three best states because of taxes and that for full-time RVers. They call it domiciling, but they're actually switching, they're actually moving their residency to that state and become a legal resident of that state for tax purposes so they can lower their taxes. And then you also vote in that state. So they actually become residents of that state. Now, my mom and stepdad full-time RV'd for 5 or 6 years, maybe a little longer. And a lot of times they spent their winters down in Burnett, Texas. They domiciled in Burnett, Texas, but their house of record, their residency was still in Ohio. They had their driver's license still there. The vehicles were licensed in Ohio. My sister who lives in Ohio got all their mail and sent it down to them in, you know, like a UPS box. She took care of some of the bills and stuff for them. But anyway, Mom and Bill could not vote in Texas because they weren't residents in Texas. You see where I'm getting at? So Let America Vote is couching this as, oh, we are suppressing the vote of these college students. And we're not. If they're a legal resident of another state, they can request an absentee ballot, fill it out, mail it in. A lot of times, Ohio does this, and some other states do this. You can actually download the ballot, the absentee ballot online, but then you have to mail it in. It's real simple to do. But yet, Let America Vote and Jason Kander, they lie about this. They flat out lie about this. Targeting, and this is, they're saying this is targeting students, okay? Representative Brian Stone's bill would require an out-of-state college student to show evidence that he or she did not come to New Hampshire solely for attending school, but rather intends to make this state his or her home for the time being. Stone, a Republican from Northwood, said the bill wouldn't prohibit students from voting, but would help restore integrity to the voting process. He cited estimates of the numbers of people registered to vote in multiple states to back his claims. But critics noted that being registered in two states doesn't mean someone voted twice. They also took issue with some of the acceptable evidence listed in the bill, including payment of state and local taxes and the presence of immediate family members in the state. One occupant questioned whether buying lunch at the statehouse cafeteria and thus paying the state tax on meals would qualify. To me, that was a tongue-in-cheek thing. You know, that was kind of an idiotic question to me. But anyway, Michael Parsons, a student at Dartmouth College, said the bill's intention was clear: to silence his voice. The message to me, while I love the state has no interest in protecting my right to vote or keeping me here after college, he said. No, Michael, the state wants you to do things the right way. If you want to change your residence to New Hampshire, change it to New Hampshire. Don't stay a resident in another state and say your rights to votes are being suppressed by New Hampshire. Quit scanning YouTube videos and gaming on your computer. Take 2 seconds out, get the ballot from your absentee ballot from your state and file it that way. I'm so tired of these college, especially college students, that just feel so put upon that, oh, we got to do this extra step. We got to take this extra step. What am I going to do? I can't do that. That's too hard. That's too hard. I can't do that. I can't take time out of my busy gaming day, I mean studies, to download a ballot to send back to my state. That's just, that offends me that you want me to do that extra work. Folks, I'm laughing because it's so idiotic. It is so idiotic. This guy like Michael, this type of attitude here, where he gets out in the working world, and I don't know what degree he's after, but he gets out in the working world, he's gonna have a rude awakening in the working world. I'm telling you that right now. I mean, some of these college students out there are just, they're a safe space. How should I phrase this? They're a safe space just waiting to happen. And that's what they want. They want this safe space just all the time. They don't want to be offended. They think, and I don't want to expand on this too much, but I have been thinking about this lately. I was watching Jordan Peterson sort of debating a feminist interviewer on Channel 4 in the UK. And it's on YouTube. And this feminist was like, well, don't people have a right not to be offended? Now, Jordan Peterson, I love this man as far as his style and everything. He doesn't get mad at her. Sometimes he repeats her question back to her. But his answer was so spot on. He said, no, you don't have a right not to be offended, because if you have a right not to be offended, you're going to impede on my right to free speech. So no, you don't. And that's true. There is no such thing as a right not to be offended. If you don't want to hear what somebody's saying, don't listen to it. Get out of earshot. You know, don't go to your narrative echo chamber and hide if you don't want to be offended. But you don't have a right not to be offended. You know, you can walk away. If someone's saying something you don't agree with, walk away. But you don't have a right not to be offended. I thought that was about the stupidest statement of the whole interview there. And I don't mean to pile, and I forgot her name, I apologize. I don't mean to pile on the interviewer for Channel 4 in the UK, but my goodness, she got to where she's at and asking dumb questions like that. I mean, don't we teach our children better than that? Mommy, Daddy, he called me such and such or so and so. Okay. Stop calling your brother names. Is that better? I was taught when I was very young not to take offense to things. So what if I get offended? Big deal. Doesn't hurt me. Nothing happens. Nothing happens when, and I'm taking this from a comedian on YouTube, nothing happens when you're offended. You know, so just get on with your life if you think you're offended. You know, some of the stupidity and the ignorance that goes on out in America, especially in colleges, that offends me. But just because it offends me doesn't mean they're going to stop. Oh, you know, this kind of ignorance, this willful ignorance, it really offends Dan Clements. So, you know what? Maybe we need to stop that. No. If I'm offended by something, I don't let it work at me. I don't walk around staying awake at night thinking about it. I'm like, it offends my sensibilities, but I'm not a snowflake that's going to melt. You know, I got rebuttals to these type of arguments. I just rebut them and go on about my life. If you're offended by it, tough. If we go around and quit saying things that offend people, no one's going to say anything. We're going to live in silence. And what kind of world is that going to be? My goodness. Now, the last article I want to get into today is the, I got a message from, not personally, but it was in my email and I went to the website. Here's a message from the chairman of the Constitution Party. His name is, let me get over here. Oh, let's see here. Frank Flukiger. That's a funny name, folks. Frank Flukiger. Now, he posted this on the 29th of January this year. He's national chairman of the Constitution Party. He has got some news here, which I thought was fantastic. First bit of news is, and I'll just read what he's saying here. So many things have been happening in the past few weeks that it's been a challenge to keep up with everything. First of all, the Texas Constitution Party recently received a donation amount of $7,000 towards the rental of a booth at the annual Conservative Political Action Conference, the CPAC, to be held in National Harbor, Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C., on February 21st through the 24th. The National Party has agreed to provide the literature and other material for the event. This will give the party exposure to the attendees there that we have not had in years. We are grateful to the Texas Party for making this possible. So we're going to be at CPAC. Now, that's an invitation. You got to be invited there. You just can't show up. And if you want booth space there, it's going to cost you because they have to pay for that venue. So if you got booth space, and I don't know what it's going to cost, but if they raise $7,000 towards the rental of the booths, I imagine it's a little bit more than that. But this is important for the Constitution Party, which I'm a member of, because it gives us national exposure. There's going to be Republicans and conservatives. I don't know if there's any conservative Democrats that come in here. Libertarians actually show up there. They're going to be there. So this gives the Constitution Party some national, much-needed national exposure, especially at CPAC. Eventually, I'd love to see some, we have some really good speakers in the Constitution Party. I'd love to see one or two of them invited, or at least one, invited to speak, you know, have a speech at CPAC. That would be fantastic because it's the Conservative PAC, Conservative Political Action Committee or Conference, CPAC. It's supposed to be for conservatives. Now, what I said in the beginning of the show, not all conservatives are Republicans, and not all Republicans are conservative. You know, it goes both ways there. So I'm glad that the Constitution Party has a booth there now. Secondly, the recent anonymous $1,500 donation to assist us in getting ballot access in Hawaii has paid off big time. We turned in nearly double the number of required signatures on January 19th to the Hawaii Secretary of State. The following week, we were notified that the required minimum of 750 valid signatures was met. In all, including the $1,500 donation, a total of over $3,500 was received from our supporters that made this possible. This is the first time ever that the party has qualified for a ballot position in Hawaii in a non-presidential election year, and will enable us to run candidates for office there this year. Only two states, Alaska and South Dakota, gave the Castle Brady ticket a higher percentage of the presidential vote than did Hawaii, and only 14 states garnered more votes for the Constitution Party ticket than did Hawaii. This all came as a surprise to the party leaders. It is obvious that our message resonates with the state. Our focus is now on the state of North Carolina, where the required number of valid signatures was recently lowered from 95,000 to 12,000. Our people in North Carolina wasted no time in getting the ballot petition drive going there. Since mid-December, the state party has been gathering signatures at one of three gun shows each weekend and have thus far gathered nearly 1,300 signatures. These signatures have all been collected on a volunteer basis, which is most remarkable. The signatures need to be turned into the respective counties for validation, then returned to the party leaders, who in turn must deliver them to the North Carolina Secretary of State by the end of May of this year. Reaching that goal will not only put the party on the ballot in 2018, but also qualify the party for the ballot access in 2020 presidential election. Now, I'm just reading this here to let you guys know that there's a lot of states out there that are becoming sympathetic to third or alternative political parties like the Constitution Party and actually lowering the barrier for entry. In Pennsylvania, they lowered it so much, all you got to do is breathe on the glass, pay the filing fees, and you're on the ballot almost in Pennsylvania. And that's the way it should be in any state, because that's what happens with the Democrats and Republicans. They don't have to go through all this voter, you know, these signature drives, these petition drives to get on the ballot. They just show up, breathe on a mirror, and pay the processing fee to get them on the ballot. And I've always said what's good for the goose is good for the gander. We should get this also. Why not? Why not indeed? And they're talking about in the state of North Carolina, they're actually using some of that money to hire professional pollsters to get the rest of the signatures they need. Now, starting this week, the week of the 29th of last month, we will have a full-time professional, actually beginning of this week, what am I talking about? We'll have full-time petitioner in North Carolina gathering signatures every day. He has offered us an extremely reasonable per-signature rate for which we're most grateful. Our volunteer workers will continue to gather signatures on weekends at gun shows and other events, but to reach the 12,000 signature goal by the end of May is going to require the help of professional signature gatherers. We need to raise the funds in the coming weeks to keep our momentum going. Achieving ballot access in Hawaii has opened up new doors for us, and gaining ballot access in North Carolina will open yet more windows of opportunity, so we simply must achieve success in North Carolina by the end of May. So the Constitution Party, whether you like them or not, whether you think, and this has been the argument for years, especially by Republicans. Well, we can't do that. We can't abandon the Republican Party and let the Democrats win. Well, folks, that line of reasoning is so old and so false, it's not even funny. If the Republicans aren't doing what you want them to do, but you keep putting Republicans in because you don't want the Democrats in there, who is being the insane one? Or who's being the disingenuous one? If you're supporting politicians who revere the law, who revere the Constitution, the separation of powers between the three co-equal branches of the federal government, you recognize that the federal government is created by the states. You know the history behind it all. You recognize that a governor of a state actually has more authority and power than the president of the United States in a lot of different matters. Then why are you still voting Republican? Why are you even part of the Republican Party? They're not going to change. They're not. There's too many cronies in the Republican Party. There's too many politicians, period, on Capitol Hill that are making way more money than their salary. I laugh when they say, well, we can't live decently on $174,000, is what senators make every year. Well, they're lying to you if that's all they're making. They're flat out lying to you if you think that's all they're making. And it just amazes me how many people believe that. So, it just, again, folks, it's just amazing. A lot of the things that people are told, they take it at face value. Well, we just don't have time for a third party. Well, if not now, when? And they never can answer that. Well, after the election, we'll work on it. That's the same argument they've been using on the wall. Well, let's fix it. Let's do amnesty first, and then we'll do the wall. The wall never gets built. You see where I'm going there? This has been the Dan Clevis Show. I'm your host, Dan Clevis, your constitutional warrior. Remember, if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time. Have a great rest of the day, folks, and God bless, and we'll see you on the next video. Remember, Sunday, attend the church of God's choice, not your choice. Have a great rest of the weekend, and God bless, and we'll definitely see you for an episode on Monday, if nothing else.